On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and Marcus give last-second predictions for this season, including the team's record, what do we expect in the playoffs, team MVP, most improved, and so much more. Plus, we get into Taurean Prince's new contract extension. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. Another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. The NBA season is finally upon us. I am your host, Josh Bass, a lifelong fan of your Brooklyn Nets. Just beyond excited for this season to start. And finally, we have basketball to talk about. Isn't that right, Marcus Barrahall?
Yeah, there's basketball happening like as we speak even. And the Raptors-Pelicans game went to overtime. Everyone's so excited. They just want to keep playing.
I know. That Raptors-Pelicans game, I think people were sleeping on it once the Zion injury news happened, but we have a new person we stand now, and his name is Nicolò Melli.
My guy Pascal Siakam showed out also. He did foul out, but nice numbers.
Put up big stats. Van Vliet was awesome. We, of course, got the kind of consistently unreliable commentating of Marv Albert and Chris Webber. And if you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets, you'll see that I was continuously incensed by them for repeatedly calling Nicolò Melli Mel, which was not great in my book.
Yeah, I feel like that happens every year, and like people mispronouncing names or like completely botching names. And I feel like it's one thing if it's like March or February and it's a guy who like just got called up from the G League, but I feel like first day of the season, like what have you been doing all off season?
Exactly. And like Melli is not a complicated name. If it's like, you know, it's hard to pronounce like Ingus Bradzikis, I get it, but Nicolò Melli is pretty phonetic.
Right, exactly.
So anyway, enough about pronunciation. That might be a separate podcast that we do maybe for next off season. Marcus, put it in our queue for off-season material, but it's time to get down and dirty with some predictions that we have for the season ahead for our Brooklyn Nets. We did a short segment on Locked On NBA a couple weeks ago where we kind of talked high level of what we're thinking. But Marcus, in terms of the season for the Nets, you know, last year they finished 42-40, had the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, got bounced in five games via the starters, or what used to be the starters, now the what is their name now the free agents podcast, or no, Dunks podcast, sorry, we'd call it a douchebag sweep where you win the first game and then lose the next four. So got douchebag sweep by the 76ers. Obviously the big offseason additions of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, D'Angelo Russell gets sent to the Warriors. Some other nice pickups on the margins, the Taurean Prince trade, DeAndre Jordan getting signed, guys like David Nwaba and Garrett Temple in the fold. What would you see their record being this year? Better than last year? What are you thinking for playoff finish as well, if you do think they're going to make it?
Yeah, I think that we both feel pretty confident that they'll be a playoff team, and I think we both also think that they'll be better than they were last year. Even if you think that the Kyrie Irving for D'Angelo Russell swap is kind of a wash, which, I mean, Kyrie is like inarguably more talented. It's just a matter of if like the off-court stuff, and if he can kind of keep his head on straight the whole year. That's really the only concern in terms of that being an upgrade. But for me, the biggest thing is Caris LeVert most likely staying healthy the whole year this season and getting him for basically like three or four times what they got from him last year. So that's a big reason for me that the team should be better. Of course, there were key losses like Damari Carroll, Jared Dudley, Ed Davis, but those guys were all like, they played and they were like big culture guys, but they weren't so irreplaceable that guys like Garrett Temple, DeAndre Jordan, David Nwaba, who you mentioned, Taurean Prince, can't like fill those gaps and kind of replicate, at least on the court, what those guys were able to do last year. So I think that the team should be better, and we've been talking about them being in like that mid to high 40s win total. I think 46 and 36 is kind of where I settle. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you in that 45 to 46 range because, as you mentioned, you know, they did lose contributors, but not guys that were irreplaceable. The thing is, the guys that they brought in can definitely kind of do the job and even exceed that, particularly guys like Torian Prince and DeAndre Jordan. But the depth that the Nets have this year just isn't quite what they had last year. Obviously, Kevin Durant going down for the year, Wilson Chandler with the suspension. They were expecting him to at least be a serviceable player. Crew, it's still some uncertainty there on what that's going to look like and if he's going to be able to play to start the year. So between that and a couple guys who are injury concerns, you know, Kyrie Irving has not been the beacon of health for his career. Caris LeVert, obviously dating back to his days at Michigan, is someone with a lot of problems as well. So the Nets are a team now that's certainly more talented, but one or two key injuries and really they can struggle because, you know, Torian Prince is their only guy at the four right now. They really have no kind of lockdown defenders for wings because Prince is an inconsistent defender. Really their best option is probably David Nwaba. You know, if one of the two centers, Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan, were to go down, depth would certainly be a problem there. There's no kind of ready-made replacement at the third center spot. You'd have to go with a guy like Nick Claxton, who's certainly unproven. So this is a team that is vulnerable, but, you know, in an Eastern Conference where the talent just isn't there 1 through 15 like it is in the West, the Nets are going to be one of the better teams in the conference. I think there's kind of no bones about it. Getting a premier player like Kyrie Irving, who, as you mentioned, is just clearly a superior talent to D'Angelo Russell, as good as D'Lo played last year, the Nets, I think, will be a really good team, barring any catastrophic injury. And that's why I put them down for about 45 to 46 wins. And let's just go, I'll go on the low end of it, 45 and 37.
Yeah, and it's interesting trying to predict the Nets because there's other teams that I've heard people talk about, like the Spurs, where you know that they're going to beat the bad teams and, like, they probably won't win a lot of games against, like, the top teams in the league. Whereas the Nets, I feel like they kind of have, like, a higher ceiling and a lower floor night to night because of their variance in their three-point shooting and, like, the lack of defense. They can kind of get into a lot of shootouts, which is, like, what we saw when they played the Nuggets last year, which is, like, a game that it just kind of comes down to who's hotter on any given night. So I could see them losing games to, like, the Hawks, the Cavs, like, the Hornets randomly, but then also beating teams like the Clippers or, like, just random things like that. So I do think that they're a flawed team, like you mentioned, especially in terms of their depth on the wing. But yeah, I think we're in agreement that, like, when it comes to the East, it's just so barren that they're probably going to be one of those top 5 to 6 teams anyway.
Yeah, the East is an Earl Barron conference.
It's a Barron Trump conference.
It's a Barron Trump conference. It's a Barron's test prep conference.
Oh, wow, that's a good pull.
Good, yeah. Well, I think let's end on that note. But yeah, because I think when it's a good point because, like, especially, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie is, I think, a really good scorer, but he's certainly inconsistent. Karis is still trying to figure things out. As far as scoring goes, it's probably one of the lesser developed parts of his game. So besides Kyrie, there's no one that's going to be able to consistently get you buckets night in and night out. So they will be susceptible to some of the bad teams in this league. Not to say that's Charlotte, but maybe it could be Atlanta, Chicago, some of those teams that were kind of more so in the 10 to 12 range in the East. And, you know, the Nets have certainly lost games against weak competition in years past, even when they were a strong team. So I think Kenny Atkinson's going to prepare them well and keep them motivated, and that will buffer some of those tough losses against poor teams. But overall, I think they have enough to get into the playoffs. But once they get there, Marcus, what do you think? Do you think this is a team that could win a round in the playoffs? Obviously, a lot of it depends on if Kevin Durant could come back. You know, this is going to be something hanging over the heads of Nets fans all season. The Nets have continuously said not to expect him back this year. However, with kind of the timetable of standard Achilles injuries, it's possible he could come back in April. Play a few games in the regular season before the playoffs were to kick in into gear, should the Nets make it. And he could be a guy that could come back and play 15, 20 minutes a game in the playoffs if the Nets feel and he feels that it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not, like, expecting KD to play. Obviously, if he does, that would be huge. But I still think that even without him, the Nets would probably have the best player on the court in a first-round series against anyone except for Philly and Milwaukee. Like, the teams that they could match up with, if we're assuming that they'll be in that like 3 to 6 seed range, are probably the Celtics, the Pacers, or the Magic, or maybe the Heat if they get hot. And I think Kyrie is better than Kemba Walker. We'll see what Oladipo looks like when he eventually comes back, but as of right now, I would take Kyrie. And then, like, no one on the Magic is that good, and the Heat, Jimmy Butler, I guess, would be in that same conversation. But I think that they'll definitely have the talent to get out of the first round. But then once it gets to the conference semis, I feel like Philly and Milwaukee are just on a total different level and like a collision course for the conference finals. I would be really surprised if neither of those teams makes it. But I did see on Twitter earlier today, Bill Simmons tweeted that he has the Heat making the conference finals, which surprised me. But
yeah, I mean, he's a lot of what he says, it goes in one ear and out the other for me at this point. I don't know why people are obsessed with the Heat, because I think that they're really going to struggle on offense because their shooting just isn't there. You know, Dragic is someone who is an okay shooter, but kind of at a twilight of his career. Winslow was pretty successful playing the point last year, but that's not going to be there. You have Butler, who's a worse shooter than Josh Richardson. That's kind of a fact of the matter. And then you have some guy. I mean, you have Olynyk who can provide some spacing, but they're really going to be relying on Tyler Hero, and people are praising him as if he's going to be the next J.J. Redick, but it's more so likely that he's going to be a Luke Kennard.
Right, yeah. And he has looked really good, but, I mean, it's so hard to tell this early.
So, and as far as the Nets goes, I'm with you on that. I think they could win a round, but if they were to get to that second round, assuming that Philly and Milwaukee kind of hold serve and in whatever order, one's the one seed, the other's the two seed, the Nets just don't have the horses to match up with those teams. They don't have the size, and they don't have kind of the wings that can really defend some of those guys. And even a team like Boston could come out and really give them a problem in being able to have anyone that could guard Jason Tatum if he does make a leap this year and becomes a more consistent scorer. Same with a team like Atlanta. The Nets don't have a great guy to be an answer for John Collins. He's too quick for the Jared Allens and DeAndre Jordans, and just way too strong for any of their wings.
Are you expecting Atlanta to be in the playoffs?
They could make the 8 seed. I wouldn't put it completely out of the question.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's like low-key like a decent clump of teams kind of in that 3 to like 10 range in the East. Like, none of them are particularly good, but they're all kind of like, I wouldn't be surprised, like, even if like the Pistons made the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, 8 teams have to make it. I think when you look at, yeah, obviously you have the top 2, and then kind of there's a morass of Boston, Raptors, Nets, Pacers, Heat, Magic. So if one of those teams has a serious injury and drops out, there's an opportunity there for maybe some of these young upstarts, whether it be Atlanta or Chicago, or Detroit even, the first two being teams that have a lot of young talent and maybe accelerate their timeline and make a run. Because, listen, no one expected the Nets at the start of last year. People liked what they were building, but still no one thought that they could come out and win 42 games and make the playoffs. So there are always surprises. I think in the East, it's not going to be the chalk 8 teams that people are expecting.
Yeah, basically any team that's not the Knicks, Hornets, Cavs, or Wizards, like, wouldn't surprise me if they made the playoffs. Which, I mean, it's kind of similar to the West, just like a way watered down version.
Yeah, it really is. It's an interesting corollary there. So in terms of team MVP, Marcus, and team most improved, I think those are kind of the two key picks that we want to document here. Obviously, if you want to hear our full superlatives pod, which we had a lot of fun with, go back and check us out. And of course, you can get all of our podcasts if you subscribe at Locked On Nets, wherever you get your podcasts. But Marcus, team MVP, I think we will both have the same one. It should be a pretty obvious choice here.
Yeah, I would hope it's Kyrie Irving. I mean, he's the guy that is like the headliner right now with Kevin Durant sidelined. Caris LeVert has the potential to greatly improve and like get to at least close to that level at some point this season and at some point in his career. But right now, Kyrie is like the top guy. He's the most talented player Brooklyn's had in a really long time, maybe like since they've been in Brooklyn. I'd have to like go back and look. But yeah, Kyrie, like, if the team is going to go anywhere, he has to be the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think from kind of a pure cachet standpoint and where they are at the stage of their career. And no, it's not kind of Darren Williams, because I think he had this potential when he came to the Nets, but it was very, very much short-lived. Probably has the most cachet of anyone since kind of Jason Kidd, Vince Carter. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. D-Will was the guy I was thinking of, maybe like Joe Johnson, but I feel like they were both like a little bit past their peaks.
Yeah, well, D-Will should have been at his peak, but it's a whole other story, and I don't want to rehash my feelings for that. So I think Kyrie Irving, obvious pick for Nets MVP this year, just a lethal scorer really at all levels, very solid passer as well, and someone that I think a lot of people have mentioned. I think with this being his first season with the Nets, I think he's going to come out guns blazing and really look to prove himself, especially after his rap got dinged a lot throughout the league with everything that happened in Boston last year.
Yeah, definitely. He's got like a huge chip on his shoulder, and a lot of people have pointed out like this is different from Boston in that he chose to come here. He wasn't traded here, so hopefully that makes a difference. He does have guys like Kevin Durant. I almost said Kyrie Irving. He is Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, who he's like friends with. So hopefully that makes a difference. And then you mentioned most improved. I feel like LeVert is the obvious answer because he could win like the actual NBA most improved award. But I'm going to go a little bit off the board and maybe in the hopes that you're taking LeVert, so I'll go a different way. And I'll say Jonan Musa, who his shot looked really good in the preseason and in summer league, and he did not really do much of anything last year for the big team. He played a big role in the G League team making the G League finals, but I feel like there could be minutes for him this year if he's able to like find a crack. Like what happened with Dinwiddie and LeVert being hurt last year, Napier got a lot of opportunity, a lot of minutes, and he, as we painfully remember, couldn't make the most of it for very long. But if a situation like that came up where Musa got an opportunity, I think that he could have a positive impact, not to the level of like Joe Harris or Torian Prince on the wing, but I think he definitely could provide something.
Yeah, no, I actually think Musa could get some run this year. I considered him. I went with another off-the-radar pick. Not Caris LeVert, not the newly extended man Torian Prince, who, and we'll get to that extension a bit. This kind of more falls in the line of maybe a comeback player of the year versus most improved. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I don't. Is it DeAndre Jordan?
It is DeAndre Jordan. So he's someone that has looked very much re-energized in the preseason, looking extremely spry. And, you know, maybe he doesn't have that same pop and burst that he did in his Clippers years, but still looks very much the part of an elite athlete in this league, especially at the center position. And for DeAndre Jordan, I think a big thing for him is that he's not going to have to carry as heavy a load as he's done in previous years, just given kind of what he's going to be expected from a minute standpoint. You know, Kenny Atkinson has said that he's going to want to play the matchups between starting DJ and Jared Allen. But, you know, for the most part, you can assume basically a 50-50 even minutes distribution. So if that's the case, DeAndre Jordan's going to be playing the least amount of minutes that he has since his second year in the league. So I think given kind of that reduced role and the kind of reduced wear and tear on him throughout the season, I think he'll be more refreshed, and I think he's actually poised for a bounce back year. And it's not to say that his stats were bad last year. They were kind of in line. I think it was more so his on-court impact, but he did have some really nice progression with his free throw shooting. I think this year his impact on the court could be very much bounce back, and his stats will kind of consistently be in line with a very good producer on a per minute basis.
Yeah, it's interesting because it felt like he just kind of like disappeared from the league, where like there's so many centers now, like Jared Allen, Clint Capella, even Steven Adams. Like all those guys are kind of in the mold of what DeAndre and Tyson Chandler and guys like that helped like kind of establish, just like that huge rim running guy who blocks a lot of shots. And so I think him being on the Knicks and then also like not really playing down the stretch like made people forget about him, and it made me forget about him too, honestly. But watching him in the preseason, he's looked really, really good. And like you said, hopefully like the reduction in minutes helps him stay healthy longer term. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do this season.
Yep, and he'll immediately have a huge challenge tomorrow, starting the season off, going up against Karl-Anthony Towns and the Minnesota Timberwolves. But, you know, that's my pick for most improved this year. You went Mojana Musa. And if you want to improve your wardrobe, you got to go to Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering code LOCKEDON at checkout. Marcus, the Nets made some news yesterday with the announcement of the Taurean Prince extension. Wasn't entirely certain if it was going to get done, but they re-up him for 2 years, $29 million. Taurean would have been a restricted free agent at the end of this season. The Nets obviously thought highly of him when they traded for him from Atlanta. He had a torrid preseason, was just shooting the lights out of the ball. I think shot 63% from three or something crazy like that. Really, I think on the offensive end, he's a perfect fit. You know, Kenny and him didn't overlap in Atlanta, but obviously Taurean worked with a lot of the folks that Kenny worked with from his time as an assistant there. So they have some sort of rapport there. And the Nets obviously felt good about what they saw from him, and think the contract itself, the value, kind of the years and the money is extremely reasonable, and definitely a nice win-win for both parties.
Yeah, I texted you when this news broke that it reminded me a little bit of Joe Harris's extension from a few years ago, which I think was 2 for $16. And like, this is kind of like, the market has changed. This is like a pretty similar deal. And I just feel like it's the kind of thing where if things don't work out, you're not on the hook for a long time. And if they do work out, then that's great. And I would assume that they have his like bird rights or something after this contract. But yeah, I was mostly surprised with the timing of it all, because like, we still haven't seen him play a single regular season game for the Nets. So it did seem a little premature in that respect. Like, you look at the Pelicans, they didn't extend Brandon Ingram, even though they could have. And I don't know. I just think that it does limit them in terms of they're going to be a luxury tax team most likely next season or in future seasons following that. So they really only have a certain number of moves they can make. And I was just a little bit confused as to why they made this one so soon. But like you said, the contract itself is pretty reasonable. Prince has looked really good. So it's hard to argue with it. It's just, I felt like it was maybe a little soon.
Yeah. And you know, it's an interesting point. I'm always kind of on the of the opinion that it makes more sense for teams to be super cautious and kind of wait to see how the year before restricted free agency pans out for a lot of players, especially if it's someone who's on a new team, new situation. It's no guarantee that they have a good season. But I think this one does kind of make sense where the Nets are at. And obviously, you always have to take in consideration factors like who's the player's agent? Maybe they'll get disgruntled if there isn't something that's fully locked up. And you want to be able to take care of the player and make sure there's not any sort of acrimony during the season. But kind of with the situation that Nets are in, they weren't going to have any cap space this off season. And you have to think, if Taurean Prince even has a decent season, he's going to get a lot longer of a contract than 2 years. So maybe the money is comparable to that 14.5 per year, but the kind of the commitment itself is going to be a lot longer. This makes sense for Prince because he is kind of an older player. Even though he's only been in the league a few seasons, he's going to turn 26 towards the end of the season. So it makes sense for him to get some nice money at 2 years, especially for a guy who is kind of a mid first round pick. And then he'll be able to hit free agency again at his prime. He's 28 or 29.
Yeah, and the Nets with this signing have like kind of locked up their core, at least for the next couple of years. With, they have him signed, KD, Kyrie, DeAndre to that 4-year deal. LeVert they just extended. They extended Dinwiddie during last season. And then they've got Kurucs and Claxton on those rookie deals. So that still leaves guys like Joe Harris and Jared Allen who need to like figure out what's going to happen with them. But the main point is that this team kind of seems mostly locked into what the roster is right now going forward. And so if things can click, that's obviously huge, and that's really, really good news. But at the same time, if things don't click, then you end up in a situation where you're kind of stuck. So hopefully this team is able to work things out and gel on the court and then integrate KD once he's back healthy, because they are kind of set in this lineup right now. And I do think it's a good one, but they are set in it.
Right. But they can still get off this Torian Prince contract. I mean, I don't really have a huge gauge for him right now besides him shooting the lights out of the ball in the preseason. But he could definitely outperform this contract. He could underperform it as well, but it's also just given kind of the years and the money, the Nets could easily get off that and attach like a small asset to have some one of these bottom feeder teams that's looking to do what the Nets did a few years ago, just kind of taking assets on, taking flyers on guys, and the Nets would be able to dump Prince's contract on them should things go wrong. So I think it still allows them some sort of flexibility, even though from a current cap perspective, it's not looking too great.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And like you said, it's only 2 years, so it's not a huge commitment. It's just that like he was part of basically like a salary dump trade with the Allen Crabbe thing, so I think his market wasn't super high. Obviously, he can outperform that contract and get that value back up. But then if he does that, I feel like they kind of want to keep him. So it's one of those things where, like, if he plays well, you are kind of upset that you only signed him for 2 years. But then if he doesn't play well, it's kind of hard to trade him. But I think he'll play well. So this might just be moot. Excuse me.
What'd you think about the extensions in general? Anything that really surprised you in terms of the deals that got done?
I think I was mostly just surprised that they kind of all got done. I thought, I guess other than Brandon Ingram, but I thought that there would be more guys unsigned and that more teams would be more willing, like you said, to just kind of wait it out and then sign those guys in the offseason, because it's really just Ingram and like Bogdanovich, I think, who are the main guys who didn't get extended. So that was the biggest surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with that. And for me, the one that I was really shocked about was probably the DeJounte Murray one. Just because when you take a player like him that has a lot of potential and a lot of raw skills, but you're taking someone who's coming off a really serious injury and someone that relies a lot on athleticism, I think you'd want to see him before you lock him into a four-year extension. And I get it, he's a Rich Paul client, and who knows what that has to do with it. But especially given since last year you had a guy in Derek White who did not do anything his rookie year. And probably a lot of Spurs fans counted him out. But he emerged last year as a really solid contributor, a guy that could drop 40 in some games and was a really, really nice cog for you and can develop into more. So you have some insurance there in case Murray doesn't pan out. I don't know why you want to give him a large extension without seeing him come back. And he just doesn't have the track record for me to feel comfortable giving him a $64 million contract. But Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford are a lot smarter than me, so who knows? But that was really the one that I think was a bit befuddling.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I've seen like a lot of Spurs fans kind of on Twitter saying that this could be like what the Warriors did with Steph Curry, where you sign a guy who was like maybe injury prone or had a lot of injuries to a like slightly below market value, and then once he's back healthy, it's like a huge underpay. So $16 million a year, like if he is able to reach that potential you mentioned, that's not a huge price. But like you said, the 4 years part of it is what's like a little bit worrying if he does keep getting injured.
Yeah, for me, like it's more like even because Steph at least produced a lot in his first few seasons. It was more kind of the health concerns, and no one expected him to kind of become a Hall of Fame player. But this is more so even like a Mike Conley, where it's for the player that they've been, it's a huge overpay because DeJounte Murray showed a lot of potential in his two seasons, but he still has no shot to speak of. He's not a great distributor. He's an okay finisher, but he's so raw and there's so much for him to work on. He's a good defender and a good slasher, but you need a lot more than that to get paid $16 million a year, and especially at the position he's at, you need to be some sort of threat from the perimeter or else teams are really going to sag off of you. And on a team where you have DeMar DeRozan already, it's a crunch for some of their players to make the spacing work.
Yeah, like just thinking about it, like compared to the Prince extension, like he's gonna be making more than Torian Prince is, and I feel like Prince, even though he probably doesn't have as high of a ceiling, has proven more in the league so far.
Yeah, or I think I would even say they both proved like equally little, but I think that makes sense. Marcus, let's save the Spencer Dinwiddie securitization of his contract next time, but I'm actually really excited about this. And I know Spencer gave a quote that he got some good feedback from the Players Association, and some of the roadblocks that they had initially put in his way to getting this done have been reduced significantly. So we'll talk about that next time. Also, recapping the first game of the season against the Timberwolves. So excited for that. Please subscribe to us on Locked On at Locked On Nets. Rate us, review us, and then follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I will be live tweeting tomorrow. I canceled some plans. I said, can't. It's Nets opener. I have to be there every step of the way. And we will be there every step of the way for you this season on the Locked On Podcast Network. So excited for this to kick off. And until next time, be well.
Bye.